was taken care of.
Yes, MediShare works, and it's so easy to get your questions answered, too. So why not? You can call right now, 833-39-BIBLE. That's 833-39-BIBLE, 833-39-BIBLE.
Another big space rock is about to make a pass by our planet. USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes says it's around the size of the Statue of Liberty.
Asteroid 2010 WC9 is expected to pass by our planet at about half the distance to the moon on Tuesday. Astronomers say there aren't many objects that size that pass so close to us, but this asteroid does not present any risk to the planet. Astronomers, though, say they discovered the asteroid in 2010 and then lost it for 8 years until it popped back up on their radar again earlier this month.
Republican Senator Orrin Hatch said today he would introduce new sports gambling legislation after the Supreme Court struck down a federal law that banned betting in almost every state. What the Supreme Court ruled today was that the 1992 Amateur Sports Protection Act that prohibits sports from authorizing and licensing a sports gambling scheme violate the anti-commandeering rule. Many states have already begun looking into the option of what it takes to legalize sports betting. This is USA Radio News.
The following update is for drivers who pay too much for car insurance due to DUIs, DWIs, tickets, or anything else. Our company specializes in low-cost SR22 auto insurance. We know that mistakes happen and offer free quotes for very affordable auto insurance meant specifically for you, the overpaying high-risk driver. The quote is free and we'll handle the filing so you can start saving money. Call 800-758-0725. 800-758-0725. 800-758-0725.
The state of Vermont became the latest state to raise the minimum wage to $15. Now, there it's going to take effect starting in the year 2024. Many times what we see when the minimum wage is raised is a decrease in jobs. Well, John Tamney says due to technology, we're going to see jobs go away, minimum wage increases or not.
Well, I think the technology is going to erase those jobs either way, and that's a good thing. Let's remember that it used to be that our jobs were making food every day, that working on the farm. And so either way, the technology is going to erase this. This doesn't mean that young people won't have job opportunities. It just means that we'll redefine entry level. Young people will get to do more and more advanced work from a very young age. And so the last thing you want, though, are minimum wages, because that's just a barrier to getting your foot in the door. My argument is that work is the reward, that people are happiest when they're accomplishing things. The difference in modern times relative to the past is that people will more and more view work as an expression, as a place to showcase their unique expertise. That's so different from the past when your work choices were very limited. And so we don't want to put wage barriers up to people getting to do that which they love or that which they think they would love.
Tamney also has a new book out titled The End of Work, Why Your Passion Can Become Your Job. Very interesting stuff there, John. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
And this is your host at Hot and Hunter and Georgine Trinkle. And I have a special guest in the studio with me, an author and award-winning author of several different books. We're going to be talking about that and so much more here at Hot and Hunterdon. Today's May 14th. We always start out with our quote of the day. And because we're talking about words and books and how we communicate, I have a quote from Charles Dickens. And I thought this was interesting based on the time when it was written, and no words have ever been more true. Electric communication will never be a substitute for the face of someone who with their soul encourages another person to be brave and true. And that came from Words of Encouragement. So that is our quote of the day. Obviously, the little tickler there is we're talking about words and communication and with an author, Michael Stephen Daigle. So we have that going on, but you know, we have to pay the bills around here, so, and the weather. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hello, my name is Robert Burns. My website is bobburnspeaks.com, and I'm inviting you to listen to my show at 1 o'clock on Friday afternoons on Hunter and Chamber Radio entitled Awaken to Your Purpose. How many people walk through life awake and knowing why they were incarnated here in this beautiful planet? Not a lot of people do. I was in my late 40s by the time I found out, but now I know. So listen to the show, and maybe that'll promote you to awaken to your purpose. And thank you so much.
And we're back here in the studio to find out a little bit about the weather. Well, for one thing, I'm happy to report that we did eventually see the sun today. It peaked out, maybe 2:30, 3 o'clock, and right now it's 71 and mostly cloudy. We're coming off of Mother's Day weekend, and yesterday I don't think we got out of the 50s in the area, so it's nice to be able to say 70. I actually considered just skipping the weather forecast this entire week because it is so bad. And I need sun, and it's almost summer, and this is not working for me. But I guess we have a higher calling here at Hot and Hunterdon, and we have to give the weather. So I'm going to do it quickly and accurately, and then we're not going to talk about it anymore today. We're looking at tonight some thunderstorms, maybe a chance of some showers. We have a low of 61. So actually, tomorrow morning, I'll be happy when I wake up and it's 60 degrees out. I will not be happy when it is raining because it is going to rain tomorrow. But we have a high temperature of 85 tomorrow, so that I can live with. Even though we won't see the sun, at least we have some warm air gusting at us. And Tuesday night, we have heavy rain, and there is a high probability of that. You know, the weather's not usually right, but I think we're over 70% of heavy rain Tuesday night, so stay home. Wednesday, we have a chance of showers. Same thing Wednesday night, and so it goes the rest of the week. Our high for the week is on Tuesday, and every other day, we're just in the 70s with lows in the mid to upper 50s. So it's not a great forecast, but it's not a snow forecast, so we take what we can get around here. We're going to do a commercial, and then I'll be back to introduce my guest.
All you veterans, listen up. The sponsors of the May 19th Patriotic Concert being held at 2 p.m. at North Hunterdon High School are giving away free tickets to veterans and their families as a thank you for your service. Concert includes special guest Joe Piscopo and over 100 performers and musicians, including a 17-piece big band, a 32-piece string orchestra, Broadway show Trans-Siberian Orchestra singer, an operatic angel, a rising child star, a choral group, and of course the award-winning Hunterdon Harmonizers. You can call the show's producer Kevin Gray at 908-419-9878 for ticket info. Call right now because tickets are limited. The number again is 908-419-9878. That's 908-419-9878. It's going to be a great show, so veterans, get your tickets now.
Okay, and we're back here in the studio. Continue to have technical difficulties with our music here. So we're going to just jump right in, and we're going to introduce our guest here, who is now live. I will only mute you if you misbehave in the studio. Those are the rules, so no cursing either. So I know we don't have an issue with that. But I want to thank you for joining us here, our author, Michael Stephen Daigle.
Hi, Georgine. Thank you very much for having me, and glad to be back on your show.
It's really exciting because we have a lot of things to share with our audience today. Mm-hmm. First and foremost, congratulations on your recent award.
Oh, thank you. The book called The Weight of Living is the third Frank Nagler book in a mystery series set in North Jersey. And I decided as a way to sort of test whether or not somebody else thought it was a good book, I started sending it out to contests. And I picked contests where there's blind judging by companies that have been doing it for a few decades. And the results have been rewarding and quite surprising. The book has won 3 awards. Last fall it won the 2017 Royal Dragonfly Indie Book Awards was named first place for mysteries in that contest. And then this spring, it was named a notable 100 book in the Shelf Unbound Indie Book Awards. And then just recently, in the last couple of weeks, it was named a distinguished favorite in the Independent Press Awards for 2018. You know, I don't know what to say. I'm sort of hornswoggled that the book is coming back with that many accolades. It's nice to see. So.
And it's not a surprise at all because the series has such rich characters that we're going to explore a little bit. But it also, the Indie Awards and the readers, Indie Readers, are what makes the book industry a little more competitive, because it takes away the edge from major publishers and it allows the readers to really pick what they want, and the companies doing the contest to know what readers really want to see. They want to see strong characters. They want to see characters that are woven into the story, some intricate plots and twists and some surprises along the way. And your books do that.
Well, thank you. I'm fortunate. My publisher's Imzadi Publishing from Tulsa, Oklahoma. So here we have a guy from Jersey hooking up with a couple people from Oklahoma, and it's literally two people. We have a copy editor who is also a well-known romance writer in the Midwest. But I've been surprised and quite thrilled at how much work they have actually done. We do advertising pieces that I can use online. We've done YouTube promo videos.
And I want to talk about that, because that trailer that was done introducing, I think it was your second book.
Okay.
Was amazing. It was you thought that came out of Hollywood. The imagery, all of that. It was great.
They're done by a woman named Anita Dugan Moore, who also does the covers, and she's got a tremendous artistic touch, she has great technical ability as well. And to put them two together has produced memorable videos. And I think they help. I check on, every now and then, I'll check online to see how many, hits we're getting on YouTube. And all told, all three of them have gotten more than, I think, about 150. So people go to them. And because they're available, I'll throw up a tweet every now and then and says, hi, here's a YouTube video about this book. Just to see. Online marketing is very difficult to measure. You can spend a lot of money in all the wrong places, which is why I started going to contests, because at least I figured here's people who read these things professionally for a living, and if they come back, I wasn't expecting for them to win awards, but if you have horse races that win place show, if you get into the show category, that's better than not. And somebody paid attention enough to read the book. So I also spent the money for a Kirkus review. Kirkus is another media company publishes a monthly magazine with reviews. That's really all they do. And it's sent to libraries and industry personnel and schools and movie people and editors and agents and all the professionals in the business, and it came back with quite a good review. And again, I sent it to them to see if somebody who reads books for a living would actually like it. It wasn't a case. You can get your friends. You can bother your friends into giving you a million hits online if you want. If you want to have friends after the week, next week, because you can only ask so many times to say hi, go to this site and vote for me. But these were non-voting; these were blind judging contests, and the Kirkus review was good enough that I got two emails: one from their advertising department and one from the New York Times advertising department. They thought that book would interest their readers. So I spent a little bit of money and ran ads in one of their publications. Far as I can tell, just sort of tracking as well as I can online, it seemed to have helped. It seemed that there were hits on the pages. And beyond that, you don't know. It's all a different way of marketing. So.
That is very encouraging, and we should say that your books are available online. Mm-hmm. You can download the audiobook. One of your books is audio, and others have some website traction from Barnes & Noble. Maybe you could tell us about that.
The books are available in paperback and ebook from Amazon, Barnes & Noble, a Canadian outfit called Kobo, and also at Walmart.com. Okay. We recently produced an audio book of the first book in the series called The Swamps of Jersey. We found a veteran voice artist from the Midwest who used to be on TV for ABC. He's been on radio, and he's got – dozens and dozens and dozens of recorded books. And I look at his resume and go, how did we find him? Because he's got a track record. And we'd put the book out. I've heard from people who have downloaded it. They liked it. And it's a different market. A lot of people are buying audiobooks because they're in the car. They don't want to listen to the radio. And around here, both FM and AM radio were hard to get on your car radio because of the hills. But people want to listen to somebody reading something. And a couple people have downloaded and they've passed along a note that they thought he did a good job and they enjoyed it. So I'm amazed. It's interesting. You know?
That is great. And with the technology today, these different home items, you can read something in your car and then it knows and it picks it up when you're in the house or at a different site to transmit.
No,
so
absolutely.
It's really neat.
Yeah, I spent all morning watching Microsoft upgrade my Windows 10 into something. And
I'm sorry.
That's all right. Yeah, I know. The first screen that flashed up was put in your phone number and we'll link your computer to your phone. And it's like, okay, that's interesting. You know,
yeah, it's really neat.
Yeah, you can do it. I'm sort of glad that they can do it because I've tried to do that before and mess it up. So, and I don't want to lose anything. But the technology is there. And this guy, Lee Allen is his name. He has his own studio and apparently has people who do production work with him. And so you get a good quality read. He did it very quickly. It came out a month before we expected it, and it's interesting to have somebody read back what you wrote, because I read stuff when I'm at libraries, and I read it to myself, but I don't read it in character. To have it read in character, and then you compare, was that what I had in mind? And then as I listened to the whole book, it was like, yeah, okay, we did. You know, the interesting thing. And this is the difference between writing it and reading it. When you're writing it, you do have to stop every now and then and say, he said, she said, Nagler thought, or something like that. You have to put something in context to help the reader through the mass of type on the page. It's weird when they do it in an audiobook, because he'll be reading a passage in character, and then in his narrator voice, he'll go, he said, and then he goes back to the character. And the first times it was kind of jarring, but I'm thinking, how could I write that so he doesn't have to do that? But there really isn't any way to do it. You do have to identify your speakers as you're writing in print. But it's sort of interesting. But I thought he did a good job. And it's hard because everyone has a version of a New Jersey accent that unfortunately sounds like The Sopranos. and the first in the early part of the book, it's almost heavily Sopranoized. But then you realize that it's 3 o'clock in the morning, and Frank Nagler, the lead character, just woke up. He gets a phone call. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. He hasn't slept for 4 days. And so he's grumpy, and his voice is very gruff and very Jerseyized. Later on, when you hear him read a scene after Nagler's had some sleep, he doesn't sound like a waterfront gangster. What he sounds like is a normal Jerseyized character. It was very interesting to hear his descriptions of or his versions of Jimmy Dawson, the reporter, who's a bit of a wise guy. He had a good wise guy tone to it. And then the other cop in the book that is prominent is a guy named Chris Foley, who's sort of a whiny, self-important, and he got that voice right. The best voice in the thing, though, and this goes back to the tape that he sent us, is the old mayor, Howard Newton, who is 80 years old and a gangster. I mentioned in the character, I had to send him a character list with descriptions, and I said, the voice that you used initially for these guys fits Howard Newton perfectly because, yes, he's a gangster. He's 80 years old. He's got the voice of Methuselah. And so you have this conversation with him and Jimmy Dawson, and Dawson's kind of light, and he's going along like this, and then there's Howie Newton. It's like, Howard Newton, I am God. and it was perfect. You know, and you read that and you go, wow, okay. That's the difference between having me read it as an author and having someone trained as an actor reading it in character. So.
And I think it's interesting the insight behind the words that you don't necessarily think of as a writer until yeah. until you hear it from an actor perspective. It's pretty interesting. So we do have to pay the bills around here, but we will be back to talk more with Michael Stephen Daigle and some of his work and his reaction to his first audio book. Stay with us.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, para-planner at Patton Heide & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heide & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heide & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
And we're live back in the studio to talk to Michael Stephen Daigle about his reaction to an audiobook that was recently released and some of the insight as an author to hearing your work for the first time from an actor.
It's much different. I had a friend years ago who read a couple of pieces of poetry, and she's a poet herself, and so it was interesting to hear her inflections on that. But they're 25 lines, and while she reads remarkably well, even she said that you're going to need a man's voice to do these books. We had talked about. My publisher and I talked about this more than a year ago. And Anita, who does the covers, had suggested that I try to do it. So I did some sample reading, but I don't have the voice for it. I don't have the characters. I can read and pause and things like that and pretend to be in character. But it's different when you have an actor who's done other material, who's also performed as an actor. Who understands how to get into the particular character. And then if you have a scene where you have multiple characters, that's when the ability of an actor to move from one person to another shows up. There's a couple of scenes with reporter Jimmy Dawson and Barry, who owns Barry's Diner, where most of the meetings take place. And they're supposed to be funny, and they were funnier having Lee read them than they were in print. He had the timing down. He had the inflections of the key words that made the jokes funny. And it was, I was chuckling, and I wrote them, you know, and it's a little odd. But it just shows the difference between having a talented actor read your material and try to read it yourself. And I hope that the people who like audiobooks take the time to listen to this. I find the remarkable thing out of all of this is that I have my own audible.com page, which I just find to be remarkably weird, because who knew? Who would have thunk it? And there it is. You can download it and enjoy it. And people have, as I said, a couple of people who have heard it, enjoy it. It's important for us to try, as a small publisher, to do this, because this is a growing segment of the book industry. More and more, even New York Times bestsellers are being turned out. You go into them with the contract that you're going to create an audiobook. So we're hoping that people respond to this one, because it would be nice to have down the road have all of these, all three books in this series, turned into audiobooks. In the meantime, the stories are worthwhile. Frank Nagler is a character that people respond to. He's not a Sherlock Holmes. He's sort of a plotter as a cop. He follows the leads step by step, but he has some intuition into where it's supposed to go, and he acts on that. I was at a book show last week down in West Deptford for their library, and got to talk to a lot of readers. And the thing that we kept pointing out, and they kept asking about, is, you know, what do the books have meaning? And in a sense, there's a sense of redemption and hope. Even though they're murder mysteries and people do die, and there are bad characters, the characters who survive are the characters who are trying to change their circumstances or rectify things in their life. And I think that's what made the weight of living so interesting for readers, is that it ends abruptly, because in the other two books, The Swamps of Jersey and A Game Called Dead, there's some time where Frank Nagler takes a little bit of time to kind of assess where he is. He's a middle-aged, depressed man. His wife died when he was very young, and he turned all of that grief into police work rather than taking the time to heal. And he carries his wife with him around in his memory and heart all the time. In the first two books, there, after all the crime fighting is done, he's able to stop and kind of assess. He looks in the mirror and says, well, okay, I'm breathing and I've got both feet on the ground, so things are okay, I guess. In the third book, he doesn't have that chance. And it's partially because terrible things happen to friends of his. And he gets told by his female companion, Lauren Fox, in a fairly emotional scene, that he wants to just walk away from it. And she says to him, Frank, I get to grieve in private. I get to go home and be sad. You can't. You don't have that privilege. You have to grieve in public. And it's a change for him, because he has to recognize that everything that he needs to do to finish the crime, to end the crime scheme, is going to mean that he has to put himself aside and let the other characters, and do what he can to put the other characters in a place of healing. And so the book ends very abruptly once that sort of occurs. And it's not black and white. the characters do. There is some lingering concern about the state of mind of all of these people. But that's, I think, why it makes an interesting read, because you don't want everything to be end perfectly. You want to have some variety, and that's why the books work, and I think why Frank is a compelling character. So, and Georgine's fiddling with all the controls here.
Well, it's we have to stay live, and I'm hoping to get a live stream up. We do take a break now for some news, so we're going to do that. And I hope when we come back, I'm going to figure out what privacy settings I have that I can't stream us. And hopefully we'll have that all figured out. We'll be talking more about the characters in the book and how it is as an author to figure out those conflicts and resolve those. Stay with us.
USA Radio News.
First Lady Melania Trump underwent treatment today for a kidney condition and is expected to remain at Walter Reed National Military Medical Hospital for the rest of the week. That's according to the White House. The White House said she went through an immobilization procedure and had no complications. Earlier today in Israel, the U.S. Embassy officially moved from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. Part of the U.S. contingent on hand was Jared Kushner. Kushner talked about what this move means to the United States and Israel.
Israel's a sovereign nation with the right to determine its own capital, the same right that is enjoyed by every other country in the world. In taking this action, the United States has also chosen to strengthen the bond between our two countries. Our special bond is the envy of nations throughout the world.
Former Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid underwent surgery today for pancreatic cancer at Johns Hopkins Hospital in Baltimore. A person close to Reid said the cancer was caught early. This is USA Radio News.
Okay, so the big question for any decision you're going to make, is this actually going to work? Well, if you've heard about MediShare, which is a brilliant way of sharing health care costs, you may have wondered that. Does it work? Well, so did Dr. Stuart Hoover, who initially joined to save a lot of money. The typical family saves about $500 a month. Stuart saved even more.
When we first joined MediShare, we were immediately going from a little over $1,600 a month down to $460 basically a month.
So that's wonderful, but then his wife needed emergency surgery and the bills added up to $160,000.
So we were seeing the bills coming in, and then the bills were being paid. Portions were being shared, and the end result of this is this bill was taken care of.
Yes, MediShare works, and it's so easy to get your questions answered too. So why not? You can call right now, 833-39-BIBLE. That's 833-39-BIBLE, 833-39-BIBLE.
Another big space rock is about to make a pass by our planet. USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes says it's around the size of the Statue of Liberty.
Asteroid 2010 WC9 is expected to pass by our planet at about half the distance to the moon on Tuesday. Astronomers say there aren't many objects that size that pass so close to us, but this asteroid does not present any risk to the planet. Astronomers, though, say they discovered the asteroid in 2010 and then lost it for 8 years until it popped back up on their radar again earlier this month.
Republican Senator Orrin Hatch said today he would introduce new sports gambling legislation after the Supreme Court struck down a federal law that banned betting in almost every state. What the Supreme Court ruled today was that the 1992 Amateur Sports Protection Act that prohibits sports from authorizing and licensing a sports gambling scheme violate the anti-commandeering rule. Many states have already begun looking into the option of what it takes to legalize sports betting. This is USA Radio News.
The following update is for drivers who pay too much for car insurance due to DUIs, DWIs, tickets, or anything else. Our company specializes in low-cost SR22 auto insurance. We know that mistakes happen and offer free quotes for very affordable auto insurance meant specifically for you, the overpaying high-risk driver. The quote is free and we'll handle the filing so you can start saving money. Call 800-758-0725. 800-758-0725. 800-758-0725.
The state of Vermont became the latest state to raise the minimum wage to $15. Now, there it's going to take effect starting in the year 2024. Many times what we see when the minimum wage is raised is a decrease in jobs. Well, John Tamney says due to technology, we're going to see jobs go away, minimum wage increases or not.
Well, I think the technology is going to erase those jobs either way, and that's a good thing. Let's remember that it used to be that we that our jobs were just were making food every day, that working on the farm. And so you want either way, the technology is going to erase us. This doesn't mean that young people won't have job opportunities. It just means that we'll redefine entry level. Young people will get to do more and more advanced work from a very young age. And so the last thing you want, though, are minimum wages, because that's just a barrier to getting your foot in the door. My argument is that work is the reward, that people are happiest when they're accomplishing things. The difference in modern times relative to the past is that people will more and more view work as some as an expression, as a place to showcase their unique expertise. That's so different from the past when your work choices were very limited. And so we don't want to put wage barriers up to people getting to do that which they love or that which they think they would love.
Tamney also has a new book out titled The End of Work, Why Your Passion Can Become Your Job. Very interesting stuff there, John. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
We're back in the studio. I'm still fiddling, not that successfully, but I am doing it. So we'll see what happens. I am going to try to do a live stream here. And Mike, thank you so much for being with us and talking to us about the characters. And I know you're also working on another book that'll be coming out hopefully in the fall.
Hopefully in the fall. I've got three Frank Nagler books. And I was asked by a few people, because these books go back to when I was in my 20s when I wrote the first one. And I wrote the first one, and it was okay. It was the kind of police book when you write when you're 22 and you really don't know anything about either writing or police work or anything else. But it was okay. I tried to rewrite it, and it became The Swamps of Jersey. The book relocated. Became a political book as opposed to just plain murder mystery. So then I had the title, which was A Game Called Dead, and tried to rewrite it the second time. I saved the title, but the book became something different entirely. It's more about revenge and family honor than it is about and urban terrorism than it is about what the first version of the book was. With the Weight of Living, I changed the title, changed the story completely, and it really doesn't have anything to do with what the original story was. So I was asked by a couple people to, you really ought to write the first book, and I figured out that while parts of that book are mentioned in two of the other books. It's about a serial killer named Charlie Adams. While there's pieces of the story in there, the whole story has not been told. And I was concerned when I started writing it that I was going to have to tell it in a way that readers understood it. And I realized first that no one understands it because I haven't really written it yet. And because I haven't written it, I can write it any way I want to and have it make sense. Excuse me. And so that has made it go a little faster because I've sort of figured out that I can put the story in the order that makes sense for me. The hard part is writing Frank Nagler prior to all of the things that have made him melancholy and sad. His wife is alive, and they are dealing with the fact that she's going to die in the book. And that's not a surprise for anyone who's read the other books. He speaks quite frequently about the fact that she died. But in the first book, he's a 23 or 24 year old. His wife suffered from leukemia as a teenager and then went into remission. And the hard part is writing her. She has to be the woman that turned him that. Basically put him into a funk for 20 years. So she can't be like any other lead woman character in the story, and there are several, but she can't be a saint. She needs to be smart and intuitive, and she needs to have a hook in him that no other woman in any of the other stories has, so that when she dies, she provides both, opens up the grief that he suffers, but also provides motivation for him to carry on. And that's the tricky part of writing it. And as I've been writing more of it, the two stories have to merge at some point. And at the beginning of the book, they're quite divergent. But now that we're moving into the second half of the book, they're starting to merge a little bit. I have a scene where he goes to the house where an older woman is missing. And he's walking through the house and he says, you know, the family has kind of cleaned up the house. They put in storage all the valuables. They rolled up the carpets and covered the furniture. And he goes, you know, it's like they almost expect that she's not coming back. And he said, so it must be weird for them to be in between, you know, thinking that she's both alive and dead at the same time. And then he looks and goes, well, what does that say about me? Because that's exactly where I am. I'm afraid, you know, my wife is alive, but there's a good chance that she won't be. And so he's beginning to work into that personal, the personal angst that he's feeling is starting to show up in his police work. And his, as the book progresses, his speech patterns are going to get shorter and a little more angry, because her, Martha's situation is really evolving in not in a positive way. And she's trying to tell him, she's in about three scenes at the moment, she's trying to tell him, we have to figure out how to deal with this, Frank. Because she, the one thing that Martha knows in this book is that she's going to die. And it's not because she died, I already said so as an author, it's because as a character she knows it. And there are scenes where she is trying to hint strongly without saying so that things are going to get worse for us. And so she's trying to lead him through that so that her death is going to be, she knows it's going to be bad for him, but she's trying to make it not as devastating as she thinks it will be, even though in the end it will be. It's a tricky story to write because you don't want her to be just heroic. You know, you want her to be a real human being facing the fact that she knows she's going to die.
And that she's leaving someone she loves.
Yeah.
And the impact of that, it's a pivotal moment for him.
Yeah.
Because he realizes what he's going to lose.
Yeah.
And what... what ends, and love doesn't end.
Yeah,
so.
And they were childhood sweethearts. I mean, in the other books, it's described that way. She knew him in the fourth grade, and they walked through the neighborhood. And in the Weight of Living, the character who shows up as a surprise is this nun, Sister Catherine, who knows Martha, and so the story's there, and that's what the matter to do with it.
Well, that is really interesting, I think, because we didn't start out knowing her. And then, you know, you kind of get attached to the other character and you think that there might be this romantic mm-hmm. interest, but he has this disdain and this hard shell, and you don't know if, you know, they're going to get past that. But now yeah. you're getting attached to the wife who you only knew from his mourning.
Right.
And so it's a convergence of all of that.
Yeah,
it's very interesting.
It's hard. It's going to be hard to write because you have to show it through Frank. As he becomes to recognize that his wife is going to die in 75 pages, that he has to reconcile that. And he's going to reconcile it by shutting down.
And you have to do that when he's feeling it at the time that he would have been feeling it. So very complicated mm-hmm. story plot here. We're going to do a few commercials, but we'll be back here at Houghton Hunter, and stay with us.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the chamber.
Hunter Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
¿Sabía que de cada 5 personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental? NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
Everybody over there,
get on up.
Everybody right there,
get into it.
Everybody right there,
get involved.
Everybody, you.
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
And we're back here in the studio with Michael Stephen Daigle talking about his Frank Nagler series. And not to dominate the entire hour with that, because you do write some other things, and you recently, I have to find that trailer and post that. Yeah. Stop distracting me with this interesting character discussion that during the break I'm immersed in that and not doing my job here as a host. But we also know you as a poet as well, and you recently published a few things on WordPress that were really great.
Oh, thank you. I mean, I've been sort of scribbled down poetry for a long time, but lately I've been writing more of it, and I post it on my website just because I can, and one day I'll probably collect it and self-publish something. It's a little hard. I don't send it out to magazines or anything like that. It's sort of like putting it online and getting the response. It also works as an offset to the fiction, because you write poetry differently. You use language differently, if you get stuck sometimes writing fiction. If you start playing with words, you can end up writing a poem whether you want to or not. A few years ago, I was in that position. I scribbled down some sounds, just words that had similar sounds. And I realized that, this actually has a meaning beyond just the word sounds. And it was about 12 stanzas. And my friend Diane Havens recorded it. She put a note on it and said, you know, this is the kind of poetry I like. It's short, sweet, to the point, which it was. And then 6 months later, she sent me a link online. A Danish composer named Dennis Rambler had written a composition using her reading of that poem. So we are part of an international collaboration.
That's really exciting.
It was really neat. Yeah, it was cool. It was really a well-done piece. It was just amazing to hear, because it's not just him. He's from the sounds of it, he's got at least 4 musicians playing, because he is a composer and a performer, so I think he has a standby band, and he brought them into this studio and created this composition around her reading of a poem that I just knocked out because I was having trouble writing anything else. And so you never know, and it's fun. It's interesting, because you don't know the impact of what you're going to do, and that was one impact that I had never even considered. And there it is. So, you know.
You never know what a day is going to bring.
Yeah, exactly right. So it's fun. And the poetry, some of the stuff that I actually started this writing poetry sort of seriously a few years ago after NASA put out an audio tape of one of the Voyager spacecraft leaving our solar system. It was about 3 seconds, and it was just this high-pitched kind of snap sound. And it was about the coolest thing in the world that day because it was from, 25 billion miles away or something like that. And so I kind of thought, that's interesting. So I started writing space-related poetry. It's really not about space. It's about human relations. So I wrote one about Voyager, and I recently wrote one about Cassini. The one that I posted the other day was the second one I've written about the Big Bang. One of them, that one is optimistic and the other one's not. But because they're not about science or religion, they're about human relations.
The Big Bang one was, you thought that was optimistic?
More optimistic than the other one.
Well, I'm glad I didn't read the other one. We'd be on a whole different kind of show today.
Yeah. Now, the other one, this was, it's about distance, but this one at least comes back and kind of tries to erase the distance. The other one accepted the fact that the distance remains, and that's the difference between the two. The other one, this one is... the Big Bang happened, and then there's all this scattering, and then everything comes back together in some fashion, and then the writer says, after all of that, gravity still takes place, and all of this came back together again, and then I saw your face. Okay, the other one, it's about light bursting and breaking apart and creating voids. And the characters in that one end up in their own voids, living in their own silence. And that's the difference. One is optimistic in the sense that your face comes back into line. And the other one is you're off sitting out there floating around in these little airless pockets trying to figure out how to get out. they are what they are. So...
Well, yeah. I don't think I'm going to read the other one until maybe I have something more hopeful than the second Big Bang one because that was a little depressing too. Some things don't ever work out even when the vision is in line. So we're glad that you are at least putting some other things out there because we know how immersed you get when you start working on a novel and you have your timeline and your deadlines.
Yeah, you it's hard. You start writing. I mean, I have two other books that are sort of in various stages on my computer, and once in a while I'll go back and fiddle with them. And some of that is to go back, and if you find yourself stuck, you have to go back and look at what you wrote to remind yourself how you write. Because sometimes you get so immersed in trying to change the way the story is presented, you forget there's a style that every writer has. There's a flow that writers develop. And I went back and read parts of the other Nagler books because there's a certain tone that they have that has to be present in the next one. So they fit into that Frank Nagler mystery category. Well enough that that the readers will recognize. You don't. If you're writing another character series, you'd probably write them in entirely a different way. You'd have a different style to it. You'd have a different setting based on your character. But the Nagler characters, there's almost a sense of mythology to them because the town of Ironton is a defined place. And what happens there is intrinsic to what has happened in the past and what people will hope happen in the future. So it becomes this setting that you manipulate and you let your characters play through.
And I think Irontown is one of the reasons why the series works so well and resonates with mm-hmm. people, because we all know, and especially in New Jersey, it's not one possible Irontown. There's mm-hmm. one at least in every county, and yeah. usually more. And yeah. I think across the country, people, they read the articles about the Superfund and the EPA and the toxic dump and the actual politicalness that allows yeah. people to not clean up and to, you know, cause health issues for other people. And yeah. I think they see that that could be them.
I mean, as a newspaper reporter, I worked in a lot of places like that, that had periodic booms of economic activity, a lot of one industry towns that when the industry fades, the city fades with it, and that's hard. It happens in New Jersey. We're in Flemington that has gone through four or five different iterations trying to get both feet on the ground again. You see that you're seeing a renaissance in Newark, but the East Coast after World War II, almost every major city went through that depressive stage where all the industries were war-related, and then they all ended just about the same time. And then you built the interstate highway system, and everybody moved to Pennsylvania.
And they're still moving there.
And they're still moving. So every town has that history, and it's hard to redevelop your town. People want to rebuild it as it was. But as we're seeing in place after place, you can't rebuild it as it was. You have to find new ways to do it. But you have to find a way to do it that doesn't destroy why people live there.
And not to be cynical, but a lot of times when it is a one-town industry, a lot of singular people were able to get a lot of benefits
sure.
and not the entirety of the community.
Yeah.
And so it's hard to replace that. We do have to wrap up now. Yeah. I have to get ready for our next show here at the Chamber. And we just wanted to take a moment to thank you so much and to congratulate you on your latest award, well-deserving as a wonderful storyteller. And we hope everyone picks up The Weight of Living. The information is on the website for Houghton Hunterdon, for Michael Stephen Daigle's books that you can get and learn a little bit more about the character and some of his writing. Thank you all so much for staying with us on this hour at Houghton Hunterdon. We have another live show coming up next, so stay with us.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News.
President Donald Trump fulfilled a campaign promise by moving the American embassy to Jerusalem. This was the message that you heard repeated by all the speakers at the inauguration ceremony today for the new U.S. embassy in the Israeli capital. Senator Lindsey Graham was in Jerusalem, and he talked about why this is such a big deal for the Israeli people.
Of all the things President Trump could have done to tell Israel we have their back, making Jerusalem the capital is the strongest signal he could have sent. In 1995, we voted 95-3 to make Jerusalem the capital of Israel. Trump's the first president to actually make it happen by moving the embassy. It's an unequivocal statement in very difficult times.
First Lady Melania Trump underwent a procedure this morning to treat a kidney condition and will likely be hospitalized for the rest of the week. That's at least according to the White House. President Trump was expected to visit his wife at Walter Reed Medical Center just outside Washington, D.C. later today. This is USA Radio News.
For professional staffing, there's only one name you need to know. Robert Half. Robert Half custom matches our candidates to your specific hiring requirements by combining personalized service from local staffing experts with an advanced matching technology based on 70 years of successful placements. For highly skilled accounting, finance, IT, legal, marketing, or administrative staffing, count on Robert Half. We'll find you productive, engaged employees. Learn more at roberthalf.com/radio.
Welcome to Geico's Motorcycle Meanderings.
Oh man, this is great. I sure saved a lot of money by switching to Geico. I scored some big savings and now I can use their mobile app 24/7 for all sorts of stuff. Life just makes sense now. What doesn't make sense is if a highway splits, it's a fork in the road, then wouldn't the long straight stretch be a knife in the road? And then wouldn't a cul-de-sac be a spoon in the road? What would a spork be?
Geico Motorcycle. Savings that make sense.
North Korea said it will destroy a nuclear test site 3 weeks before a historic meeting between Kim Jong-un and President Donald Trump. Former Congressman Jason Chaffetz said the president is really handling things correctly, in his opinion, overseas.
President Trump's, I think, peace through strength is pulling off. Mike Pompeo's done a terrific job. I mean, he has only been in that position a short time, but certainly in his position as the CIA at the, you know, and, you know, understanding the intelligence behind the scenes, whatever they're doing, it's working because